Countless bands came and went in America in the early 80s, frozen out of the airwaves by frightened programmers and unable to reach their audience with MTV because it wasn't there yet. The B-52s succeeded, so it seemed at the time, on image, but re-listening to them today, rock historian Ed Ward finds a lot going on beneath the beehive hairdos.
If you're going to order a cocktail called a flaming volcano, you should be prepared for the consequences, especially if you do it in a Chinese restaurant in Athens, Georgia. As the B-52s can testify, you might wind up doing some odd things, like starting a band with only a couple of members who can play and forgetting to recruit a bass player. It's true, the B-52s started out as a bunch of friends who, one night after dinner, decided to form a band named after the local slang for bouffant hairdos. They all shared a taste for silly, campy things, which is probably why they ordered the Flaming Volcanoes in the first place. And since this happened in late 1976, they probably weren't too serious about it. But it wasn't like any of them had anything better to do, so they rehearsed and played their first show in a greenhouse on Valentine's Day 1977. At first, they were part of the party circuit in Athens, but in December, some friends of theirs were off to play Max's Kansas City in New York and managed to get them a booking, too. There were only 17 people at the show, but somehow word got around, and they were soon invited back. The next thing was to make a record, so they borrowed some money from Danny Beard, who had a record store, and went into the studio.
We were at a party. The dear love fell in the game. Someone reached in and grabbed it.
Rock Lobster and 52 Girls put the B-52s and Beard's DB Records on the map. Along with their increasingly frequent visits to Max's, it caught the attention of Chris Blackwell, head of Island Records, and he signed them to a deal and produced their first self-titled album. As befitted a band with an image like theirs, vocalists and keyboardists Cindy Wilson and Kate Pearson wore outrageous wigs, and frontman Fred Schneider was as lounge lizardy as a guy in his 20s can be. Nobody took them too seriously. But despite no airplay in the U.S., they were still selling records, and those records were showing up at parties and on club sound systems. You see, by about 1980, the backlash against disco was abating somewhat, and the word dance rock began to make the rounds. The B-52s were frequently mentioned as leaders in the field, and they proved they deserved it with their next album, Wild Planet. More and more in New York, where the art crowd loved them. So did the Japanese. Cindy and Kate and the Japanese rockers The Plastics did a one-off project as Melon in 1981, while the B-52s were recording an EP called Mesopotamia with David Byrne as producer. They also toured a lot. The live act was spectacular in a low-rent kind of way, which was just as they intended it. But they also realized their audience was changing, as they themselves were. Certainly this track from their 1983 album Whammy is a bit different. In fact, they were about to confront a terrible situation. Guitarist Ricky Wilson, Cindy's brother and the architect of the band's unique sound, had AIDS. The band took 1984 off to figure out how to deal with this and didn't return to the studio until the summer of the next year. In October 1985, Ricky died. Without him, the band struggled along, although they continued to record. Then, in 1989, they released their first album without Ricky, Cosmic Thing. Love Shack became a top 10 hit, as did the album. The band toured, and Rolling Stone gave them a Comeback of the Year award. But things were falling apart. Cindy Wilson left, and they recorded their next album as a trio. More hits didn't come, and as the 90s faded, so did mentions of the B-52s. The Greatest Hits album, released in 1998, had two songs by a new lineup, but they weren't impressive. And the last time I checked their website, it was pretty empty. It's okay. Listening to their records today, there's a lot more there than you might have figured when they first came out. Kate and Cindy's vocal work is spectacular. Just check out the fish imitations at the end of Rock Lobster and think of Yoko Ono. And Ricky Wilson and drummer Keith Strickland got a lot of mileage out of very little and made it seem easy. More than that, they personified a particular place and time, and nobody can take that away from them.
Ed Ward currently lives in Berlin.